Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Oh, God, this happens every time Strange Way comes around. You think they'd figure it out by now. Hi, good evening, and welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon, the place that most people say looks like the inside of Jeannie's bottle, and it's going to be full of the most fabulous people. Tonight, I'm so excited, and I hope my guests weren't offended by my doorman. He just gets, you know, really into the job. Tonight, I have this is going to be so much fun. I've been posting the videos and pictures all over social media, but I've got a group of folks that I think a couple of them were here in Atlanta recently. Let me tell you about them. Let's see. The first is a couple who, they are known as a time-traveling duo located out of Medford, Oregon. I'm told they are often spotted walking around trying to find their wayward time vortex, and they're known for their larger-than-life outfits, mechanical birds, smoke-producing backpacks. My brother had that all through high school. And other mechanical marvels, mostly their steampunk mechanical dinosaur, D-I-N-O, pronounced Dino. And they've made so many props and costumes, and I'm going to just bring them on in. This could be no one but the fabulous Lord and Lady Towers. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon.
We're honored to be here today, Madame Perry.
Well, I'm honored to have you here. And you knew it was going to be a Jeannie's bottle, so just find a nice comfy cushion that feels good to you or a couple and settle in. I know you're hard working, sometimes comfortable, but find a good cushy one. All right. And a friend of mine, friend of yours, just came in the door too. I don't know if you can see, it's a little dim in here. I've known this guy for a while, and he's the owner of Dreadnought Radio. He's also a pretty big cheese in the Wild Wild West Con. He's also the panels manager for that, actually. And Dreadnought Radio is the only, as far as I know, the only all-steampunk radio.
I think we may still hold that honor. I'm not sure.
You think so? Maybe so. And, of course, that could be no one but James Captain Darkfang Breen. James, come on in.
Well, thank you. And don't mind the crew. They're just, you know, nosing around a bit. You know how we treasure hunters. Yeah, that's what we call ourselves are. Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, for the last 2 months, almost every guest has made a comment about this is a thriller writer, Brett Wright, who smuggled in a burrito here not long ago when we had a group show of mystery writers, and everybody's been looking for the lost burrito. I'm going to build him for the dry cleaning on these cushions. Okay, so, but I am so thrilled and so delighted to have you as my guest here. Now, are you?
Oh, it's always fun dropping by.
Or DJ Darkfang tonight. I never know. You know, I value any good alias. I have several myself.
Well, you know, when people are looking for you, you got to kind of keep a low profile, you know?
You're telling me?
Aliases help.
or as I tell people, or my husband when he asks, why don't you tell me about that? I go, you know, the less you know, the less you can be subpoenaed about. So, and another delightful and exciting person, I don't know where to start here. He is one of the most recognized figures in both the steampunk and Star Wars fan communities. He is, I'm just going to go straight to it. He's a prominent steampunk icon. He keeps the fires of unity and creativity within the steampunk communities roaring. And from what I've seen in the photos on Google Images, I tried to download a few, but they were locked up by Larry Flint Productions. But he keeps a lot of the ladies roaring, too, and their fires, et cetera, et cetera. He is the one and only John F. for Fire, I suppose. Strangeway, also known as Steampunk Boba Fett. Welcome, John. Come on in.
Thank you very much for having me. That was a wonderful introduction. I love inflating my own ego.
Great. We're not going to hear the end of it in March. I can see it now.
Oh,
wow.
I am so thrilled to hear you. You know, what if, a few years ago when after I had first become enthralled with the world of steampunk, and I had a client who wrote period mysteries, and I suggested that we market them to or find a tie-in with steampunk events because they were set in the 1860s and so forth. And then, of course, he began writing several steampunk novels named James Musgrave. And
I've actually met him. He is a very, very awesome guy.
You've met him?
Oh, yes. He's been out here at Wild Wild WestCon. I've got several of his books signed.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you have me to blame because he didn't know it. So I said, listen, I think this is a group that would really and truly appreciate, you know, the research and the work that you do on your book. So I think you should meet them. And then it inspired him, as I knew it would. And so, yeah, Jim Musgrave is he's a wonderful guy. I'm very lucky to have worked for him and promoted his books. So, we were impressed, and we talked about this a lot, the dedication to the craft. I mean, it's the stories. Books I've read by authors that I've met, I think the first author I met in the genre that I met in person was Leon Renee Heber. I met her at Book Expo America in New York about 3 or 4 years ago. And everyone is so dedicated to really understanding, and I know there's lots of little offshoots and different segments of steampunk, but everyone is so dedicated to getting it right, even in the fiction, you know, with the fiction parts, but getting it right as far as the period and the pieces. As my friend Veronique Chevalier says, you know, some people think you can just throw a cog on it and call it a day.
Love Veronique.
Yeah, I love Veronique too. She's fantastic. She's been on the show.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah, she's been.
Yeah, I think most of us know her too.
Oh yeah, well I knew that if you would all know who she was, but yeah, she's been on the show a few times, and but also the craft, as far as the building and the craft and making things, and I know I've got some experts right here, so. Let me start, if I may, and James, if you'll help me out, because you're my co-host on this tonight too. I wanted to ask about Lord and Lady Towers. My word, the magnificent things you've built, not only just your costumes and creations, but the mechanical animals and beings. But it says that you are a self-taught artist. So,
yeah.
So how do you, what kind of background did you have? Because you also sew and a maker of many things. Where did your background tie in? And from there, I'm going to ask you guys after this, you know, what your backgrounds were as far as learning how to make things, or how did you really have to start from scratch? And then how do you start from a concept or an idea and then begin planning a costume or a creature? So, Lord and Lady Towers, if you'll start.
Well, for us, I know, at least for me, my background is actually in counseling, and most people would never guess that I'm a secret doctor, Counselor Troy during the day. But so for us, Lord Towers and myself have been together. Actually, we're high school sweethearts, and back in the day, we would make our own outfits. We lived in a very rural part of Arizona, and those from Arizona know that when we say rural, we mean rural.
Yeah. Middle of nowhere. Like, yeah, rattlesnakes, coyotes. Oh, yeah.
It was a two-hour drive to Walmart. We'll put it that way. For us, yeah. So for us, it literally making things was part of the culture. Wanted something, if you saw something on TV and you wanted to dress like that, there was no way you were going to have that available to you. So I know I started sewing very early, as young as junior high school. There was a dance and I wanted to go as most girls want to go as like a pretty dress. I made a full Renaissance garb for my junior high school
Good
dance.
Good Lord.
Wow.
That was my first corset.
And knowing you, that doesn't surprise me in the least. That's the funny part.
Okay. And what did your date wear?
Huh?
And your date for this prom? What did he wear?
Oh, well, even at an early period of time, Lord Towers was never seen without a top hat. We have these great, although you'd never guess back then, he had a 4-foot-tall mohawk, so it was kind of hard to mohawk or a top hat. It was a hard decision most days.
I got to see a picture of him with a 4-foot-tall top hat,
too.
Or 4-foot-tall mohawk. I'm sorry, that was just, oh, my God.
That's great. What did you, give me that image, and it's like, you guys are so lovable as you are, but now I know you guys have been cool way back, and as a couple, so now I've got to know, what did you wear for your wedding?
Oh, the wedding?
Uh-huh.
Are you asking about our wedding?
Yeah,
what'd
you
wear?
For the prom, what'd you wear at the wedding?
So actually the picture that you see, with the large white hoop skirt and the white ruffle top, that was actually my wedding dress. And and we actually had a steampunk wedding, and it was in our hometown, there's a old steam train that's been preserved for historical purposes. So we actually got married in front of a steam train. You had the leather piece back then that you made.
I was wearing the leather corset.
So he had made this beautiful leather male corset that he wore for the wedding, and it's when we got our first leather top hat, also was for our wedding. So it was a lot of fun.
Oh, fantastic. All right.
I'm sorry, I still can't get the image of him with a 4-foot mohawk out of my head because he's so damn tall already. So
I've seen some of the pictures from his punk days back in the day, and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
See, we were already punk. We just need to add the steam. That's all.
There you go.
All right. Okay. I can dig it. Okay. So we've got your back down there. This has been you all along. All right. And now, John.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see as, talk to me about how you began to learn, create.
So, I never call myself a maker or a creator. I just kind of have ideas, and then I talk to people into doing them. So, there's also money exchanged. When I was, let's see, I came down to, 'cause I'm from Jersey, actually. I went down to Atlanta to visit some friends, and they took me to this really small one-day steampunk event. Called the Time Traveler's Ball. And I had been to Dragon Con, and I saw all these fantastic costumes, and I said, okay, I need something really cool for the following year. And got introduced to steampunk in 2008. I'd only been going to New York Comic Con, so I've only seen, sci-fi costumes and Marvel and DC costumes. Nothing like this. I saw people in these steampunk outfits, and I was like, this is all original. This is all amazing. So I met this group down there called Pain Driver Productions. Matt Silva was the head. And I was talking to him, and Jesus, that was, what, 7 years ago now? Wow. I said, you know, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I wonder if it'd be possible to mesh Boba Fett with the steampunk aesthetic. And he's like, that's a really good idea, because he was also a huge Star Wars fan as well. I was like, yeah, it's a good idea. He's like, well, it's going to cost this much. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, really? I was like, well, I have a job. I can pay you. Is how it works, right? I guess apparently commissioning not always goes so well most of the time for artist makers. So when he quoted me the price, I was like, yeah, I'm okay with this. And he set out with his group to start putting the ideas down. I was still living in Jersey, and he was down here in Georgia. So we were communicating by email and Skype and going over ideas and what I had in mind and what he had in mind. And so I came down the week before Dragon Con 2009, and I tried it on. And I walked out, and it just kind of like clicked. It was right time, right place. Because steampunk was booming in 2009, and it was an iconic character, and, you know, to toot their horns, it looked good. My contribution, I'm animated, and I like to interact with people, and I'm not a jerk, so I'm pretty easygoing and sociable, as the others on the show can attest to. I think I am. So,
well, unless he goes too long without Mountain Dew, then look out, because if you get between him and the first Mountain Dew he sees, you're going to get trampled.
Well, I mean, okay, I have some addictions. It's just really sugar and caffeine, so, and yellow dye number 5, which, you know, there could be worse addictions, I guess, but.
And then it's to all be combined in one soft drink. Isn't that just fantastic?
It's beautiful. You top it off with some Twinkies, and I'm golden. So, so from that point on, it kind of just – I started going to all the conventions I could. I moved down to Georgia, and Atlanta is kind of like a nexus for the Southeast. There are a ton of conventions, not only in Atlanta, but within a seven-hour driving radius. I mean, I can go to New Orleans, I can go to Orlando, Tampa, Cincinnati, Raleigh, like everything is within 7 hours. Nashville, it's crazy. So I started going, and then social media was kind of taking off, and I was like, oh, I should create a social media page. And I was like, you know, you can see one picture of me, you see a dozen. So I started sharing my friends, and it kind of created this weird character. And then other smaller steampunk conventions were popping up, and they were like, hey, you want to come? And I'm like, what do you want me to do? Like, well, but you got a great costume. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, what can you do? I'm like, I don't know. I can walk around in it. So I kind of was trying to figure out what I could add to this, because I'm just a dude in a suit. So when Wawa WestCon invited me out, I was like, okay, they're really awesome, and I want to do something nice.
Oh,
and
well,
special.
Thank you.
Well, so that's why I did that variant, the Western steampunk Boba Fett, to go with it.
Which was fantastic. I still got that picture as my desktop background.
My buddy David Antunes, this is how that came about, by the way. So Dave was in New Orleans, and he was working with Airship Isabella at the time, and he just was making these leather masks, and he made a Boba Fett one. And he's like, this is for you. And I'm like, stop it. What are you doing? He's like, no, this is awesome. I'm like, well, you can't just stop there. Now I got to pay you to do the rest. So he made the whole chest armor. We found this perfectly green-colored cowboy hat on this Australian website.
That wasn't dyed. You actually found
no,
that color.
That was that color. I mean, he modded it a bit, but it was
that
color.
I wondered about that.
We were just searching, and we're like, what is this, like, this weird Australian Western site? Because, you know, there's Australian cowboys. You've seen Quigley Down Under.
I always wondered how you found. You know, I was always wondering how you found the dye to get that perfect color, and to actually find out that you found it like
it
that
was
already.
Just like
wow,
that. Yep.
That's fate.
So, and then he made the goggles, and I incorporated some of the other pieces of the existing costume, like my gun belt and the rifle and my bracers. And I just got a piece of cloth from Joann's. It's like a fake leather. And cut it and modded it and made it into, you know, the poncho. And that was it. So, and it kept going from there. And that's kind of the beginnings of it. And this has been the 7-year ride, which leads up to the second fan film just came out. So,
wow.
I don't know if that answers you.
I didn't realize that the second fan film was out. I haven't been paying much attention. I feel bad.
It's on YouTube. Yep. No. We just put it up last week.
Oh.
So.
Okay. I don't feel that bad then. Still feel somewhat bad though.
It's 12 minutes of your life. You can't get back. I apologize ahead of time.
Oh,
visually,
whatever.
It's stunning. But you know, I do like brace people. We did it on zero budget. The acting is what it is because we're not actors. And the script is what it is because the guy who wrote it isn't, you know, really like a professional writer, but he did his best. So we did what we could.
Well, there you go. And it's 12 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Can we play a clip of it now? No, of course not. We don't have it. But if we
it's a YouTube video, too.
Just teasing you. Okay, yeah. We'll check that out.
I know
the
first one was really awesome. I loved it.
You know, the first time I went to it, we used to have something in Atlanta called the Atlanta Science Fiction and Fantasy Fair that I used to go to. And there would be an amateur, you know, the film competition or film fest. And I think it was some of the ones that were the most amateur were the most entertaining. Or maybe that was just me. Maybe I didn't have a very sophisticated.
Oh, no, because we did that something similar 2 years ago, I think it was. 2 or 3 years ago at Wawa WestCon where Dee Hastel came in and did a bunch of, showed a bunch of independently made steampunk films.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were there, John. That's right.
Uh-huh.
And so were Lord and Lady Towers, actually. We were all there that year. But,
and
yeah,
you were there, and you were there.
You were there.
But, you know, I mean, it was the same thing. I mean, most of them were really, you know, pretty much low or no budget, but they were just entertaining as all get out and things I'd love to go see over pretty much anything that's come out big budget in years. So, I mean.
When you make a film, I mean, and it's on no budget, you're putting your heart and your soul into it. And I think that shows in those independent films, you know, that they really loved that thing and they had a fun time doing it.
Oh yeah, well
look
what Drew Hall's been doing with Ether. You know, I mean, just, you know, the proof of concept is amazing. So yeah, the independent films, and right now you're seeing a lot more, I've noticed a lot more independent steampunk type films coming out, both, you know, live action and animated. And that's really cool to see.
And I really do. I think Lady Towers is right on. And when you've got a budget, you know, you're doing it from the heart. You feel the heart. You feel the heart in it and the love and the zeal and the work.
Yeah, dollar signs aren't even involved in any way, shape, or form.
And, you know, you get the real thing. You know, you get the real feeling. And that's meant to be there, not because somebody took something out or changed it because of who was signed and who was attached to the project and what they did or did not like. And, it's untainted. You know, so it's that way. Right. Now, James, you create your own costumes or as well, don't you? Your wardrobe for WWWC. And,
yep.
And I like
the
think
whole
that,
Captain Dark Fang look is all my own.
So, I mean, you
and
really do.
All on like no budget.
Now, when you say no budget, what do? You go out and like pilfer things
from
other dressing rooms, or
I
what?
I am like the master of the thrift store shopping. I think all told, the only thing that wasn't thrift store bought in my entire costume was the hat. And that was a gift from, you know, my better half. She had bought two of these matching hats at this Western store out here. And so, but other than that, I mean, I think the most expensive piece I've actually had to pay for was like one of the Nerf guns, maybe. And, you know, so when you're talking like, you know, $5, and when you figure in paint and modding, you know, I mean, maybe $15-$20 total. You know, and yeah, I mean, my costume started out as literally an old vest of Amber's, a red button-down dress shirt I had, a pair of black jeans, and this old bowler hat that was sitting in the closet at Wild Wild West Con 2, because I really did not know much about steampunk or anything about steampunk until Wild Wild West Con 1. Amber worked it, I didn't, and afterwards she got me hooked on the music, and that's what sucked me into it. And it's a vortex I haven't wanted to even try escaping. So, you know, hey, it's great. But, yeah, you know, that first year that I volunteered at Wild West Con, I had nothing to do for a costume. So, you know, it was that, and then some friends of ours had a, you know, a spare set of goggles sitting in their car that I put on. And that was my very first steampunk costume. And then over the course of the next year, the next year, I, you know, started developing this whole character, because I started doing a radio show of my own just at another station, and, you know, it was a steampunk theme show, 4-hour show twice a week, and I started developing the whole Captain Darkfang character, and as the character developed, I started getting ideas on just how we'd look, and, you know, the backstory, and, you know, as the ideas came, I started making the pieces and making the things I felt went with the costume, and I'm almost complete, I think. The problem with costumes is, though, you think you're done, and then all of a sudden you have another idea, and something else gets added. And it's an addiction, just like John's Mountain Dew addiction. It is an addiction. But it's an addiction that, you know, like he said, there are far worse addictions to have. Mm-hmm. And really, as far as costume and prop making, the nice thing with steampunk is there's nothing that can't be steampunk. You can turn pretty much any look you want into a steampunk look with minimal effort and minimal money. You know, and it's a really nice thing. Thrift stores are your best friend.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you ask any steampunk, you know, where they do a majority of their shopping, you're going to get one of three answers usually. You're going to get thrift stores, you're going to get Joann's for, you know, people like Lady Towers here, or you're going to get, you know, someplace like Michael's or Hobby Lobby, you know, a store like that. But those are going to be your main answers, but almost guaranteed every one of them is going to tell you a thrift store for sure.
Mine's Home Depot.
Look at the stuff you make compared to what I make. You know, I do accessories, and you do just like, wow, okay, there's a backpack on your back and it is blowing out steam. That is just too goddamn cool. Oh, look at that. It's got a mechanical bird in there, too. You have got to be kidding me. Yeah. That's how I met them. I saw his backpack, and I didn't even think about it. I wasn't even thinking about his height at the time. I'm like, that backpack is just too damn cool. I think that was the very first words I ever said to them.
And then we stole you forever and ever and ever.
And that started a beautiful friendship.
Oh, yes. They're two of my favorite people. I always love seeing them in March. I look forward to seeing them. And, you know, Strange Way is always fun. You know, and the guys from Airship Isabella. I mean, there's so many people that it's just like, I don't think there's anybody that's ever been out there that I'm just like, man, I wish that person wouldn't have come.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
Now, everybody that shows up to Wawa WestCon, it's become this big family now after, what, 5 years? 6 years?
Yeah, because we're coming up on year six.
It's incredible. And I love, you know, more and more people are, like, a lot of my friends from the East Coast, I'm trying to get them to come out. And, you know, Tony came out last year, and he was just like, what? And so my buddy Dave Lee, he's coming out, next, you know, this coming year. So I love introducing it, And but like I keep telling people, I'm like, you have to get out there.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You have to go to Wild Wild West Con.
Oh, I do it myself all the time. I'm trying to get Madam Perry out here. And if I can't get her out here for this year's con, I have been asked by the owners to do a live broadcast panel at con this year, kind of like you did last year, John. At that, you know, if she can't make it out, I guess that she's just going to have to call in and join us on air.
I would love to, and I'd love to be there.
Oh, you really? You've seen my pictures, I'm sure. I know you stalked my Facebook photo albums.
Yeah, should I be afraid? Am I missing something here? No, I told you, I would love to go. I would love to be there.
And you really should. This year is going to be the most insane year yet.
All you got to do, I told you what you have to do. Mailbox 13. Okay, so what I want to know, and we're going to ask more about, we're going to talk a little bit more about World West Con in a little bit, but when you talk about getting back up the crafting and making things, Lord and Lady Towers, when you create the smoking backpack or the big mechanical creatures like Dino, tell me how in the world you... Okay, I know that you're at one store and the Lord is at Home Depot, and how do you start to draw? Do you have a background in either of you, any kind of mechanical drawing? And how do you come up with the creature, what you want it to do? What are the steps? I mean, take us through, on a high level, don't break it down too much, because my mind will be blown. Well, maybe most of the people listening would understand much more than I would. But give us an idea where it starts, from the drawing board to deciding what type of materials to use.
You know, it's kind of... an oddball. We were going to Wild West Con 3, I think, and we were just sitting in the car, and we were like, what can we make that would just blow people away? And we were just sitting there thinking, and out of Ashley's, or Lady Tower's mouth, she goes, you should build a dinosaur. And I'm like, I don't know about that. And she's like, what's your favorite dinosaur? I'm like, well, I like velociraptors. And she's like, why don't you build a gigantic steampunk velociraptor? I'm like, I don't know about this, because this can get a little insane. So we did Wild West Con. We came back to Oregon, and I instantly started cleaning out the garage and prepping for it. And I started construction on
cleaning the garage.
Christmas
That's
Day.
The first step. Okay.
Yeah.
If you see our garage, you're stranded. That's its own monstrosity.
Yeah, in our garage we have full Victorian walls. We got ray gun that I built for some play. It's filled with just a bunch of random stuff. We cleaned out the garage, and then on Christmas Day I started construction, and I ended on March 3rd. Threw them in a trailer and instantly drove down, paint still drying. When we pulled up to the hotel in Tucson, and we pulled him out, assembled him, and he was ready to go.
Oh, well, I didn't realize he was that down to the wire.
Oh. We were doing field tests with just the framework, early February, mid-February, we had just the frame, and we were still doing field testing to see how the articulation would work. And we actually had to scrap the legs the way they had been because they weren't working correctly, and they would tilt out to the sides, and he was doing like some weird duckbill platypus walk thing. And so we had to scrap them completely and rebuild them all before we left, and it was a total nightmare. I'm incredibly impressed. He was able to get it done, just that whole project, in 3 months. But
Lady Towers never wants to see a googly eye ever again.
So, So on Dino is actually made out of foam. And as most crafters will tell you, foam is a great medium for armor work, but it can be cumbersome sometimes also. So the entire thing is made out of foam and has an armature structure underneath that's puppeteered. And a lot of our inspiration came from, like, Jim Henson and, you know, Industrial Light and Magic. We watched a lot of their movies around that time to kind of figure out how they were using their armatures for their puppeteering, because Dino was fully puppeteered.
Yeah, a lot of his construction was also inspired off of the construction from Jurassic Park's Velociraptors and how their movement went.
Oh, wow.
But all the little rivets that you can see in the pictures of Dino, there's probably, I don't know, like five.
There's approximately 400.
They're googly-eyed. What we did is we punctured holes in the back of the googly eyes and stuck super glue in them, and then we painted the googly eyes to look like rivets because it was the cheapest way we could do it. I've glued now so many googly eyes shut so they wouldn't rattle as he was walking. I'm forever tainted against googly eyes.
Oh, you realize you probably did not want to let me, of all people, know that, right?
Wait, are you the practical joker in the group, James?
I can be.
Sometimes.
I've been good the last couple years at Wild West Con. I think this year might be time to have a little bit more fun.
Oh, dear.
Going to notice googly eyes everywhere across old Tucson. I'm just going to be like, oh, James was here.
Okay. All right. Forewarned. I don't do that because somehow it just became, whenever I do a practical joke, somehow whatever I make up always seems to have something to actually do with that person's life that I didn't know about. And it just, and I had one that kind of took a life of its own and spread across a few states. And people swearing that they were involved in it and they weren't, or they saw all these things and they never existed. So
that's why you find a situation like that where, you know, it's not going to be something that's going to traumatize or piss somebody off, but everybody, you know, they're going to find it freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I think Amber's got like a bag of about 10,000 googly eyes in the craft room.
The Velociraptor,
huh?
You know, was actually his fault. I never actually intended to actually make him until she came up with this crazy idea of a dinosaur. I'm like, okay, I guess I have to do it.
Yeah. And it was awesome. I love Dino. You need to bring Dino back.
Well, Dino died, actually. I know that sounds terrible.
Oh, no. Was there a nice funeral?
Was it a natural death?
We loaned Dino to a production company that was doing a filming for some of the sponsored YouTuber people that have a gaming show. And they wanted Dino on their race car track and have him sitting there, and when they're racing around, Dino's leaning over the track and all that. And what happened was the grips on the set, I told them how to assemble Dino, and they went and assembled him, but the ratchet strap that went up and through him to keep him standing in place, they tightened it down too much and they blew out the entire back of Dino.
Oh, no.
So,
oh, poor Dino.
The only thing that survived was his head. So we keep his head around.
Oh.
Now you got to put it in a jar and just carry it around.
That would be a pretty damn big jar. Maybe I could make a plaque to put the head on, you know? Kind of, you know, you could have it mounted on your wall.
I think we should think about it mounting him. I know it sounds morbid, but...
Well, currently we take him to a lot of conventions when we're talking about large prop making and stuff like that.
Oh, there
that.
You go.
We bring him to conventions so that we can show people how the armature in his neck actually works and how his mouth opens and stuff, because all of that survived. And that's all directly attached to his head. So we just bring his head with us and we open his mouth up and turn his head and tilt it and show people how the movements all go.
Oh, cool. So he's, he was designed for instructional purposes.
Yes. He donated his body to science.
His body to science and his brain to education. What a guy.
Exactly.
James, why don't you just take over for just a little while?
Okay, your voice doesn't bother you.
I'll be right back.
Let's see here. I had a couple questions for everybody, and now my mind has gone blank. I am so good at that.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, well, you know, I hang around people like you, John. I mean, things fly out the window when we start talking.
It's not my fault memory loss happens.
That's that yellow dye number 5.
That's right.
So
on the chemicals.
But no, it's more seriously, John. Like with the filming stuff that you've done with the web series, the fan made stuff. Because I know you've been involved with that, obviously, because you know no one else could do steampunk Boba Fett. Like, how long does that stuff actually take, like, to put out, you know, to put together a 12-minute, you know, YouTube video?
Well, the first one we did, we filmed over the course of about 6 months. And that was because we were kind of making it up as we were going along. So each month, we all had about a weekend we could come together, film a scene, and then the guy who was editing it would have a month to edit that scene. And so by the time the last scene was filmed, he just kind of put all the pieces together. This go around, the second time, geez, we started planning this a year and a half ago. We're like, okay, look, we're going to do it. We're going to do it right. We're going to, you know, have a script. We're going to storyboard it. We're going to make sure we're, you know, following most of the main guidelines. And, we started filming a year and a half ago. It was March of 2015. And the last thing we filmed was the end of December last year. So from March of 2015 to December, we were filming again. It was kind of like one weekend of the month we had to designate. And we went to Birmingham to Sloss Furnaces. So we went on location. We actually we built a set in our friend's basement. We used this space for the cantina scene. It's funny enough. Our friends, we kind of traded to rent their space. They took over what used to be a BDSM club in Atlanta called the Dungeon. So we were using this to film the cantina scene. And as we got there to try and set up, I was like, all right, well, how are we going to make this look like a bar? And there's this clear coffin on wheels that lit up. We're like, that could be used as a bar. Sure. We'll use that. And we're moving all these weapons and weird chairs and racks. And I'm like, thank God nobody has a UV light. So, you know, It was interesting. The places you go and see. So we also used some blue screen. We did have this go around, our friend bought one of the drones with the 1080 4K camera on it.
Oh,
so we got to actually have some aerial footage, which is kind of neat. So that was from March to December, and then after that, they've been editing it, because this time around, my friend Corey, who's kind of director and a whole bunch of other hats, he was kind of learning as he was going on, trying to add visuals for the blue screen stuff. Like my buddy Dave, who does Steampunk Vader, he was living in Germany at the time, and he bought a green screen because I wanted him in it. I was like, all right, Dave, we need you to film this kind of scene where you're standing here doing this, and send us the footage and we'll add you in. And Corey made, a CG rendering of like the interior of a Star Destroyer and the Death Star. And, you know, he went all out. It was nuts. So it was June when I got to see a rough cut. And then after we watched it and we had like a little screening, we're like, okay, we cut this, change this, see if we can change this. This didn't look good. You know, and that's what you got to do. You got to take it and be like, you know, your first draft is not always going to be your final draft, honestly. So they took it back with the notes and the changes, and it was, yeah, the end of August when we put it up.
Wow.
So you're looking at, you know, span of a year and a half, roughly, just for that, just for 12 minutes. And that's mostly because it's a couple guys using their own free time and their own spare time to do all the graphic and CG and 3D rendering on it. I got to work on the one of the episodes with the League of Steam and their web series in the third season. You know, and they had been filming. They have what, at least like 10, 11 episodes for the third season.
I
want to say
more than that.
I think they've got
like 10 episodes or so per season.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember filming that episode a year prior to them actually like getting to it to put it out.
Oh, wow.
And those episodes run, you know, around like 6-7 minutes. But it's an intense project to like undertake when you don't have a budget. You're all volunteering. You know, this isn't your job. Like, you have a regular job to do in the meantime. So.
Oh, yeah.
You hope that people enjoy it.
I run the same thing myself like that with Dreadnought because, you know, like you said, it's all volunteer. You know, none of us are getting paid for this.
Nope.
So staffing can be kind of hard sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I could do it with just one or two people. Let me tell you.
And it's interesting, you know, you work with friends, you know, it kind of like it stresses those relationships a little bit sometimes. So you got to, you know who you're working with.
Yep.
You know, try and be professional.
Mm-hmm.
It's an undertaking.
Yeah, I found a big thing when I've had to, you know, when I work with people like that too is, you know, don't hold anything back. If you have a problem, get it out right away.
That would be nice.
That's what makes it worse.
Yeah, that would be nice if and I've come to find it's like 50-50 you get that with people. Either they're going to be honest and blunt or they're going to just hold it in and then complain later on. And you're like, well, it's too late now. I can't help you.
I could have helped you 2 hours ago.
What do you mean I'm on your last nerve? You should have spoke out 3 or 4 nerves back.
Exactly.
You should have done. You should have at least 6 nerves back. You knew. All right, folks. We're going to stop and tell you I was going to have a sponsor come on here live tonight, but we're having a little technical issue. I know with Blog Talk Radio, go figure. So who would guess? But if I could just stop just a moment and tell you about this guest, although he will be on live tomorrow night. His name is Reno Soriano. And he is all about, the first words on his website on home are healthy body, happy soul. Because he talks about how, he says, you know, there's more health information available than ever before, and yet there are more unhealthy, overweight, and unwell people than ever before. That 90% of people who go on diets and nutrition programs never reach their health goal, and that the food supply we have is devoid of foundational and viable nutrition. Also, 90% of it is either GMO or hybridized, meaning your body cannot recognize it as nutrition. So where do you get your nutrition from? Who are you listening to? And he wants to offer a simple holistic solution for creating radiant health and well-being. And he's got several books, but his newest, he was coming to talk about, is called Sensational Slimming Secrets. And it's a revolutionary pathway to a healthier and slimmer you. God knows 9 months of CrossFit didn't give me that, but they kept saying, oh, no, it's muscle, it's muscle. However, and when I thought about this tonight, too, guys, let me tell you, I was thinking about some of the costumes that you make, like especially yours, John. There's not a lot of give in those things, are there?
Yeah, we know all about that, don't we, John?
And no, I'm not like you, because I remember when, you know, for years, you know, I had a jazz band, and I used to work in the late 90s and early aughts as a professional impersonator of Marilyn Monroe and Madonna. And one thing I learned early on with that is the meaning of the word commitment. Commitment means if you buy a sequin dress in a size 8, your behind better stay a size 8 because you can't let it out. You can, but it's not pretty. And I thought about that, too, with some of these costumes. Like, you know, you can't go too wild on those Twinkie chasers for your Mountain Dew. Anyway, who is Reno Soriano? He's the creator of Body Brilliance Nutrition. He's a high-vibe, heart-centered health luminary, holistic health coach, fitness coach and transformational speaker on conscious living and expanding your consciousness. And we'll learn more about him tomorrow night. So let's talk about Wild Wild West Con.
You mean,
come on,
yeah,
Bula.
Well, there's a lot to say about Wild Wild West Con. I mean, unlike, it's the one thing the first thing that really attracted me to it when I was there the first year for Wild Wild West Con 2 was the fact that it wasn't in a hotel or a convention center. It's Old Tucson Studios. It's 90% outdoors. So, like, con crud pretty much does not exist there because you're not all crowded together. You've got room and fresh air and, you know, all that good stuff. And it's just a really immersive environment. You know, it fits in perfectly with the steampunk aesthetic. So it's a really fun convention and panels all day long. Multiple
kind of panels?
Lots of them. Let's see here. Well, John, last 2 years now, isn't it, John, that you've done Ratchet Retrocast from there?
We had our podcast there. I've talked about the film. We've talked about how you can do steampunk mashups with existing characters. I mean, there's all sorts of types of panels.
Airship Isabella usually does stuff. You know, like this past year they did some stuff talking about, you know, the movie industry, because they've been doing a lot of stuff in the film industry the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, there's so many different panels. I mean, literally, like, pretty much any steampunk type topic you can think of, there is most likely going to be a panel dealing with it.
And great thing is it's for all levels. I mean, you can intro to steampunk panel all the way up to really high technical detail about creating a character or writing skills.
Yep.
And what
we've even had ghost hunters there to talk about, you know, the ghosts of the, you know, the Old West. You know, the ghost stories of the, you know, the Southwest, the desert Southwest of this area. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of really different type things, plus, you know, music all day. You know, there's buskers, there's, you know, always people on the two outdoor stages. And then at night, we've got the big concerts. I mean, it's just a huge event. Last year, for the first time since we moved everything, Wild Wild West Con 1 was partially Old Tucson, partially at a hotel. And then at 2, it was moved completely to Old Tucson. Well, this past year, we started a thing where, because we can only have so many people at the concerts. There's only so much room. It's not, you know, a huge building where we do them for the nighttime concerts on Friday and Saturday. So this past year, we had stuff going on at the hotel as well. So the people who couldn't make the concert but still, you know, weren't done with their steampunk of the day could go back to the hotel where everybody, you know, where we have everybody stay. And we had, you know, rooms right out, and we had things like Texas Hold'em with Zombies was going on there, which is a really fun card game, by the way. Aiden Sinclair did a show out there. He's a magician. and just awesome guy. One of the guys from The Men Who Will Not Be Blamed for Nothing did a comedy show one night, Cirque du Soleil, yeah. Burlesque show. I mean, you know, a lot of different things go on. And so, you know, there's something for everybody. You know, like Lady Tower said, you know, every level of steampunk, you know, from somebody who had only heard about it a week before to somebody who's been doing it since before the term steampunk was really even known.
Yeah, you got the fashion show.
See, I mean, there's so much I can't even.
The costume contest. There's a bunch.
Okay, somebody explain to me, what is this tea dueling?
Okay, yeah, see, now, tea dueling, I wish Jocelyn was here with us. She, one of our Tucson steampunk members, my name's Jocelyn, and she's also known as Madame Askew. She is the goddess of tea dueling.
All right.
But
break it down.
God, the easiest way to really describe it is, all right, you take your tea biscuit, okay, and you're facing off face-to-face with somebody. You both have your cup of tea. You both have your biscuit. You dunk the biscuit. The officiant gives a count. I can't remember how long it is, 5 seconds, something like that, 10 seconds, whatever. You pull it out, and you have to hold it, and you can't let it fall apart. Okay, and the first person's biscuit that falls apart loses. But you can do things to try and make the other person, you know, move and jingle and, you know, things like that. You can't touch them. But you can do things. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It really is.
Whoa, wait, it is a lot of fun. Whoa, Lady Towers, woman to woman,
yes.
I'm trusting you here. Is he making this up?
No. And actually, there's actually a very dignified whole league of tea dueling where you can select your binky and make sure that it is appropriately adorned. It's a lot of fun. And the rivalry, the real gentlemanly rivalry of a good tea duel is just amazing to sit there and be like, my binky is still in the air. You cannot have it. And my finger is up. And I'm going to make fun of your mustache, sir, to see if you will laugh and your crumpets will fall into your tea. And it is quite hysterical. And Madame Askew is amazing at hosting them, and she just makes it glorious time with Sir Godzilla.
Yes, with Godzilla.
It is a lot of fun.
Everywhere with her.
I have a fun memory. I was tea dueling my buddy Tony. And you guys got to meet him last year, Tony Ballard Smoot. I call him affectionately the token black man of steampunk, because he really is.
Well, what about Charles?
Charles is new to the scene, but I love Charles to death. He's now become my second favorite black man. So it was adorable. They were together for the first time. Well, I know maybe they were at Salt Lake City. I don't know. Anyway, so me and Tony were squaring off, and we were doing, you know, best out of three. And I was up, and his biscuit broke, and mine was still holding, and I was kind of chuckling. And he noticed my elbow was resting on the table. And he banged the table, and my cookie fell over, and I was like, you bastard. I was like, I would have had it, too.
Oh.
So.
And what lesson
like
did you take from that?
Keep my elbow off the table. I was gloating. I was like, yes, haha, yours broke. No. There it goes.
Now that I've got a much better and much more entertaining picture of it, is there anyone does like a color commentary for an audience, or that you would do?
Oh yes,
Madame
and her assistant both do it. Her assistant Glenn, they both give commentary, and you know, it's hilarious.
Glenn's adorable.
I'm gonna have to see. I'll see if I can find a video. I'm sure there's a video from, you know, this past year of some of the tea dueling, and I will send it to you so you can watch it.
Okay. Because I'm trying to picture maybe you and Lady Towers on Dreadnought Radio, and you're doing color on this and go, I don't know. You know, they had a bad year last year. Yes, his biscuit broke pretty early. Yes, I think his biscuit's going to hold out much longer this time. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to check the wind or whatever in there. Like, pick up some,
oh, my God,
know,
that would be funny.
Fall, so there's some wind.
No,
going
don't even bring up the wind with T-dueling, because the one time I T-dueled, it was the wind that defeated me.
Oh.
The wind blew my biscuit over. Damn it. Oh. I will stick by that story. It was the wind. I wasn't laughing, I swear.
Nay, it was the wind that broke Captain Darkfang's biscuit. It wasn't for lack of skill.
It wasn't for the fact it was my first time ever doing it, no.
Okay.
Although my opponent cheated, she reached across the, under the
oh,
table
no.
to her She started tickling me, damn it. It was tick cheating.
Tickling you? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right,
she was
right.
tickling my leg.
I don't want to hear about this.
What?
Actually, I do. But this is steampunk after dark now.
Oh, no,
well, we haven't even gone
that's
there.
That's back at the hotel when we try making steampunk soup in the hot tub. Hey, John, do you remember
pretty...
what the record was? How many people we get in that hot tub?
I don't know, but it was nasty. I was running around with iodine and bleach trying to disinfect people. It was disgusting.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
I was yelling at people like, wash your hands, wash your hands. Oh, it was terrible.
But what do you
like
go around with?
Men?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we may look like gentlemen and ladies, but we could be kind of rowdy sometimes, too.
Especially
once the alcohol starts flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Flip side to that elegant exterior.
That is the one time a year I drink now. That's the only time I will ever drink anymore is Wild Wild West Con, the last night after the con, we're all having our big after party. That's my one time a year, and I'm perfectly happy with it.
Is it because you feel comfortable among friends?
Well, that, and I get to try all kinds of really good high-end booze.
All right.
Yeah,
I'm not going to lie.
Don't forget those steam-powered blackmail photos either. So.
I went a little too far. I was up in Detroit at the steampunk convention back in July.
Yeah, I was so mad I couldn't go. Because I know Sal, and she wanted me to come up really bad.
Sal loved her death. She's adorable. So they had this panel that they wanted me to sit on, Drunk Steampunk History. And I highly recommend trying to have this panel now at every steampunk convention. If you have the right people on it, it's very entertaining. And it was me and a couple of my friends up there, and the guy running it, Brett, he was like, what do you drink? And I said, well, Johnny Walker Black Label, obviously. And he's like, you're not a cheap date. I'm like, look, you asked, okay? So the panel before was Cogs and Cocktails, and so I'm drinking the bottle of Johnny Walker, and I killed about half of it before the panel started. I don't remember much of the panel, but apparently people said it was entertaining.
Unless they remember you.
Frenchie and the Punk were there.
Oh, no.
And that's when I grabbed Sam and Scott, and I said, look, I don't know if you've seen Rick and Morty, but there's a song, Tiny Rick, and Scott, go grab your guitar. And mind you, this is 2:30 in the morning, and I am blackout drunk, and there's a video of it. I said, look, I need to sing this song, and I need you to play on the guitar. And we did it, and it's hilarious. It's a funny video. I'll show it to you.
Is that anything like your Tenacious D rendition this past year?
Yeah, kind of. But my favorite comment, is from Professor Elemental. He said, John, you have such a lovely voice. You sound like Tom Waits gargling tar. I said, wow. Like, that's what I was going for. So there you go. Yeah,
oh, God.
I had a good time. So I try and like pace myself usually. That was not one of those times. Like I said, I like to be entertaining at conventions, usually at the cost of my own health. So
you do a rather good job of it. At least you haven't tried wrestling a rattlesnake out here yet. You know, I'm pretty proud of you.
No. They got me on the horse trail ride, right? And as I was trying to get on it, one of the Tucson workers, she was like, "You got to take this off. You got to take this off." And I'm like, the whole point was for me to be in costume. She's like, "No, the horse is going to spook. You got to take that off. And that and that." And I said, okay, I don't want the horse to throw me. I get up on there and she's like, "You ever ridden a horse before?" And I'm like, "Lady, I'm from Jersey." She's like, "So that's a no." I'm like, "That's right." She goes, "This is, pulling back is back and reverse, and this is slow down, and the saddle pommel's your oh shit handle." And I was like, "Okay, I got that. All right, I'm good. I'm good to go." And that was my experience riding on the horse through the trail. And they were like, "Look, coyotes." And I'm like, "Oh, good."
Well,
I rode it. I rode the trail.
I believe it was Jess from the men this past year decided he was going to try and wrangle a tarantula out of its hole.
Yeah, those guys, they get up to
They're
some
from
fun
the
stuff.
United Kingdom. They don't know what tarantulas are.
There you go. I'm glad you qualified. That's the way I understand it. Yeah,
and they're not. So, I mean, but, that's beside the point.
So
it was nice seeing those guys.
Oh, yeah, I know. I wish I could have seen the show.
I hadn't seen them since 2012.
Oh, wow.
Since World Steam Expo was the first time I met them. And,
who was
this? Who? The band, the Men Will Not Be Blamed for Nothing, that are from...
Men Will Not Be Blamed for Nothing. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, they're a very... They're a steampunk band, but they are very, like, old-school British punk. I mean,
punk.
Think, along the lines of, like, Sex Pistols, that kind of, like, real punk music.
Oh,
they're a great bunch
theme.
Of guys.
All right. So what else need to be warned about is when I'm at World West Con, Wild Wild West Con, and if there's a situation, it's late at night, everybody's having a swinging old time, if John Strange or if Boba Fett says, "Here, hold my Johnny Walker Black Label and watch this," is that when you start, when I should call the insurance company or somebody to help him or what? The ambulance to be ready? I'm just saying. I want to be prepared.
I haven't heard of him doing anything that insane anywhere else either, so I think we're pretty safe.
I try not to go that bad at Wawa WestCon because, I'm not trying to make a fool of myself. I do, enjoy everybody out there. I don't want to piss anyone off. I'm also nowhere near where I live, so I'd like to get back safely.
Okay, Lord Lady Towers, any great adventures like that you want to share? It's just us. I think I hear a sticker somewhere. Somebody knows something.
Well, poor James has seen us so many times. We love going to Wawa West Con. It's always it's one of our favorite events. We do a bunch up here also in the Pacific Northwest. So like we do Symposium next weekend and in Seattle, which is always a great time. And for anyone who's ever been to Seattle, I drive a stick. So
that's fun.
That's the future. In a hoop skirt, driving a stick in a hoop skirt in Seattle. it's a bit nightmare inducing.
I just see I see an animated little web comic coming up out of this.
I
say, James, this should be one of my next channels: how to drive in a hoop skirt.
You should.
That, you
I'm
know,
telling
you.
You
know, you should.
I bet you would have so many women show up at that. Like, all right, yeah, I need to know this. because I hate trying to change when I get to a con. It's such a pain in the ass.
Yeah. I think that you know, don't. That's a great idea. Don't be just joking about that. That's a great idea.
I'm telling you. You know what? I'm going to bring that up for you. I will bring that up at our manager's meeting next week. Damn it.
Well, damn it, you should. And two, because Lady Towers, I also drive a stick. So, yeah, a lot of us still enjoy it, driving stick, rather, and we would need to know this. And you would make it so much fun.
Well, I love hoop skirts. It's funny because this year at Wild West Con, I did teach a panel on how to survive in a hoop skirt, because a lot of people are afraid of them. And it's cute because the ones I wear are usually so large, I can hide small children underneath my skirt if I want to.
She really could.
And I've been tempted to in the past. Oh, you're crying? Here, hold on.
Got little shelves with bottles and juice cups and stuff.
Well, I would say, you know, when you used to go to the theater and, you know, you'd hide things in your purse, that you just need to go in a hoop skirt. You know, we should all go see the next Star Wars together, and I'll just wear the hoop skirt, and we can have a whole buffet underneath there.
The only way to let them do movies.
Lady Towers, there is no end to your cleverness. I love this. I love meeting you. Your ingenuity knows no bounds. I love it.
It's a really good idea. I think maybe I have to, you know, get a hoop skirt for Amber here for the next time we go to the movies. You know, that's a pretty smart idea, actually.
Well,
hey, have you been to the movies recently? Have you seen the price of a popcorn and a soda?
It's outrageous.
You know, I don't really go to movies, maybe once or twice a year, but recently, my girlfriend Kenya, who, if you listen to the show, you know my best friend Kenya, Kenya took me to a movie, and so she had gotten she goes, I got your ticket, just come on in. I did. I went to get a popcorn and a Coke. I thought, you know, I should have got pre-approved first for a loan. I had no idea. It was that
few.
All those things I've been getting in
the
mail.
The combo deal is only 10 cents cheaper than buying them separate anyways.
Yeah, when you go over that little thing where you pump the butter, I feel like I should just go ahead and take the whole thing off the table and take it home. I'll pay for that much butter. Have
them
on pancakes
for
the next year.
Anymore here in Tucson, they do it for you now. They don't put them out where we can get them anymore.
Oh, cheating!
That's heathen. That is hateful.
I think it's discriminatory against people who have an overfondness of butter on their movie popcorn.
Yeah.
Damn it.
It is.
You know what?
Discriminate.
My popcorn matters.
Your popcorn matters. Oh, but we were all making fun of, but not we, but somebody was making fun of John Strangeway because of his sugar, caffeine, and yellow number two addiction.
Yeah, well, you know.
And that's what we all have.
You just had to pick on a strange way. And when you only know one of them, you only have one to pick on.
Strange way. I look forward to going out. Since you're here in Atlanta, I look forward to going somewhere to eat with you, because I'm the one that whenever I ask for sweet tea or for coffee, they just bring me unsweet. Ask for a Coke, I get a diet. Oh, I thought you would want a Diet Coke. Please. You know, that's so cruel. That is so unkind. You sure you don't want decaf? Are you sure you want bread? It's like,
I got
in the door.
Funny.
No, it's cold.
It's interesting living down here now about 6 years and going back up north and, you know, not being able to get a sweet tea. And you're like, huh, yeah, it is different.
Well, I think it's like